We're here with Secretary Aldona Vosh as she's about to leave her position as the Secretary of Health and Human Services in North Carolina. And we're also here with Kendra Garlock, who is a press officer at DHHS. So first off, Dr. Vosh, you kind of intimated it a little bit the other day when you were at the governor's mansion, said that it's time to leave. What are the other sort of the personal drivers for leaving?
Well, I truly have to leave. I have an elderly mother. As you personally know, Rose, my father passed away within the last 2 years. My mother, I relocated to North Carolina to stay with me. Unfortunately, she only lasted one day in my home and she fell. She fell, required being hospitalized, then rehab, then assisted living, and right now she's in assisted living with 24-hour personal care service. I cannot not be with her at this stage of her life.
Well, I know you feel very strongly about your parents. You've talked extensively about your dad, so it's the old trope that, oh, I'm leaving to take care of family, but it sounds like that's really
the
driver.
It's really the driver. It's just too painful to see someone at the hardest part of their life and at the end of their life and not be surrounded by their support. I have to go back to be in Greensboro.
So you've managed to stay in this position probably longer than I've seen anyone, 2 years and 8 months.
Yes, yes.
That's a long time. Yet, after your announcement, Senator Heiss said he hoped to have a secretary who stays in the position longer. Now, how long is it reasonable to expect to do a job like this, given the pressure?
You know, the last statistics, certainly for the level of Medicaid directors and situations like this, so for secretaries it's even shorter, it's about 18 months. Positions at this level, if you're doing it right, you devote everything to this. Some folks do know that wake up a few minutes after 4 and I'm here depending on the day, but way before 6 in the morning. Some of my first meetings start at 6 in the morning in the department. Yes.
That's true.
Staff knows that it's true. And they don't end till the wee hours of the night. It's very demanding. The hours are demanding. And the portfolio is demanding and broad. So if you really are doing it to make a difference and improve a government and the lives of people and be responsible to the taxpayers, you do have to devote the time to accomplish the goals you need to accomplish. Therefore, that does take its toll on you physically. Of course, psychologically or nutrition or your family or every other aspect of the job.
Only your colorist knows how many gray
exactly.
hairs you've got.
Exactly. So, and certainly for us here, you pointed out correctly that I've stayed longer than history of secretaries in the department.
And yet it seemed like you wanted to stay longer. I mean, the tears last week, there was a note of regret, you know.
Again, I'm speaking about myself, but I presume every secretary, I have really put my entire soul into this, to stabilizing a very large department that had lost its way. And I felt it was my obligation to do everything humanly possible to stabilize it and redirect it, because we have to have sustainability for the future. We need this department. We need the employees who work here to be their best. We need to provide the services for folks. People count on us. Every single citizen in the state counts on the Department of Health and Human Services for something or another. Mm-hmm. For something or another. And I think it lost its way for many, many, many reasons. And I was determined, as you know, to take every battle on, and some of them were difficult and painful, and yet made such substantial gains in every single part of the department and the portfolio, and the obviously the end results, you see, they're visible to everyone. So it's bittersweet when you leave bittersweet and happy to leave it at a success. But it's like having a baby, you know.
Part of me felt you invested a lot of time in Medicaid reform. Is it disappointing to have it be the big thing that's left undone?
Not necessarily. The groundwork needed to happen, first of all, the discussion needed to be had. And as you know, I was instrumental in making sure that we started that discussion. It took a while to align our entire industry to realize that we have to move forward. We cannot stay there. And align the state and our stakeholders and everyone into a real discussion. And also set the foundation for whatever the future will hold. We could not accomplish any form of Medicaid reform until we did fundamental things. Some of them were in parallel, but fundamental things. One, have a sustainable, competent department that's accountable and sustainable, and we're there. Also, we didn't have the infrastructure necessary. I mean, I do want to remind you that when I came in the first week, I want to say hi to the employees, and I realized that was not possible. I asked, I'd like to send an email to all our employees because we had almost 18,000 or a little over that. And I was informed, well, Madam Secretary, you can't do that. And I said, why? And they said, well, most of our employees don't have email. So when we quickly forget that in where we came from and where we are now, we needed to implement basics such as that to very complex issues of how to move us forward from a decade of trying to move towards an integrated IT system, of years of trying to move forward to an integrated eligibility system, coming in new, taking time to assess, can we do it? And should we do it? And pumped out those successes at the end. And when you look at it, we are the first in the nation to have an integrated billing system in our arena. I mean, the federal government is in total awe. Obviously, they certified us and paid for most of this. But they are quite happy with North Carolina for doing this. But nothing could move forward in Medicaid reform unless you have the basic things that you need to move forward. So that was all in parallel, our discussions, our the policy discussions, the gathering our stakeholders through the whole state, our infrastructure of the department, then of course figuring out how to take us forward into the Medicaid arena of some ability to have forecasting models that we all agreed on that had never before did we have forecasting models that both state budget and Department of Public and Human Services and physical research agreed upon. We succeeded. We did it. And, people accepted our rebase numbers. And now, you know, we have a wonderful relationship between the three different parties concerned. All of that needed to be created and structured and in order to now ready to move in a direction.
Now that mm-hmm. rollout of that integrated mm-hmm. system, that mm-hmm. was bumpy to say the least. Is there mm-hmm. anything you would have done differently, whether it be maybe delaying or running in parallel, maybe some different messaging around it as it happened?
I don't think we had an opportunity for that. The federal government did not allow us to go in parallel, so we didn't have that option. The option didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Federal government would not allow that. Running in parallel, delaying. It was delayed for 10 years, and at $3 million a month of delay, there's only so much that the taxpayer really should be delaying. I'm not sure that a delay of a month, 2 months, 6 months would have. I don't think that a delay, I don't look at it that way. Maybe the only thing, if we were to do it again, would be somehow communicating with our providers, this is for real. You need to take part in this. You need to learn. You need to show up for your training. You need to be a part of this equation. And we need to learn from you what you don't know so we can help you learn, or we can learn it together, or whatever those things. So those lessons learned, we've strengthened how we work in NC Fast and all the implementations we've been doing by being far more aggressive with our stakeholders, right? So it's, as you see, it's less painful in the NC-FAST world. Mm-hmm. So maybe that is something that, of lessons learned. There's not an ability to run it in parallel, and I do not think it should have been delayed.
I'm thinking about things like some of the messaging along the lines of, I remember there was a press
yes.
release that went out that NC-TRACS is on track. Well, mm-hmm. it wasn't really on track.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. Maybe the way it was received was odd because of choice of words, but it was on track.
Mm-hmm.
It was on track. Remember, IT rollouts in industry are not you turn a button on and all is perfect. That does not exist in industry. Look at the Affordable Care Act rollout. Look at every time you get your new phone or your new car or your whatever it is that requires your new computer. It's painful. You have to learn that are things that aren't by the nature of IT. And also everyone has to remember is when we speak of the type of IT we're speaking about, that's not something that you build it, it's a finished product, and then you use it. That's not the case. This is a living and breathing entity, changing by the day, because changes of requirements from the federal government, changing with industry, it changes nonstop. It will never stop changing. So it's a different way of kind of looking at it. It's not something that it's like, you know, you build it, it's there till it gets old, and then you build another one. That's not the case in a very complex integrated system that constantly we're building onto and we're adjusting to what we need to align with the requirements that are coming at us constantly.
So, I mean, I guess one of the things is that, you know, could there have been more effort to express that to, you know, the
sure,
public?
Sure, sure, sure. We don't really have very many opportunities to do that. But the fact that we turned the on button on and we were able to connect with everything from the federal government and the Affordable Care Act to the providers to the fact that it, I'm putting in quotes, you know, worked, that is a huge accomplishment as we were getting everything into that. And there were deadlines and deadlines and deadlines and offered enormous complexities. So I think that I am glad that we made that decision. I don't think delaying it a few months or another year would have made it a whole lot easier or less painful. Or the feds knew we were going to turn it on, and everyone was on board with that. So there was no reason not to.
I mean, this was pretty early in your tenure.
Yes, yes,
and
it was the first 6 months.
And I think about, you know, that there was just a massive learning curve for you walking into this door the first day. And then you've got this sort of coming pretty early in that learning process. When do you feel like you kind of began to hit your stride?
Oh, gosh, I really think from the beginning, because it's hard to say from the beginning, realizing from the day I walked in that this was going to be very challenging. I walked in and remember I had no senior leadership team. You walk into a $20 billion organization with a lot of empty offices. Not only, I mean, there was never a CIO in the history of the department. Can you imagine? There was never a CFO. There was a true CFO. I mean, I had to hire, the head of communications, the head of HR, three deputy secretaries, the CIO, CFO. And I had to find these people. I personally had to go find and recruit people from deputy secretaries on down to, it was uncanny. The first 6 months, most of my effort was put into finding people to please come and serve. Come serve in government. People weren't coming out of the woodwork to apply for jobs. I had to find everyone. I was so busy from the first day I came in, I never really thought in those terms. It was just one thing after another to get it up and running.
But was there a relief? Point,
yes,
was there
when
a point
there were people
when you
in offices.
Of realized, like, oh, I've got this. Like,
I don't know if there's a point. I've got this, but there was a relief when all of a sudden I walked into here with my senior policy advisor and an 18-year-old from Elon University who was here for the month. That's how I walked into the department, to run a $20 billion organization. So when there finally started to be people that were hired, that were doing things, it was a sense of enormous relief that we can get the work done. If there are more of us, we can get the work done. We can do it. If there's just more than the three of us. then meeting and finding of the existing people, because remember, there were 18,000 people here. Finding people in the organization that you met, that you realized this is a really, really compassionate, committed, intelligent person, and taking them from wherever you found them and dusting them off and propping them up and allowing them to succeed, putting them in positions where they were able to flourish.
Can you give me an example of something like that?
Sure. My deputy secretary for Human Services started out as a social worker in her earlier career and was buried several layers down in the department.
That's
Sherry Bradshaw.
Right, okay.
He was a perfect example. Lots of people like that that I met and was able to discover, to meet, and then provide professional opportunities for them in leadership roles. And one of the best parts of the last almost 3 years was meeting people who have devoted their entire careers to public service. Phenomenal, great people. I mean, my goodness, I could rattle off so many names of people that were just absolutely fantastic. I mean, look at Dr. Megan Davis, and, you know, acting state epidemiologist. I mean, she's phenomenal. Look what a great job she did with Ebola. Pure, committed public servant to do phenomenally great things. I mean, there's so many like that. I mean, look at Angela Taylor, who's running NCFast in the IT world. She's been in this for 22 years. She's phenomenal. So there's so many people like that that you find the unsung heroes of public servants. And I was really happy to be able to find them, to discover them, to offer folks opportunities to excel professionally. And that's a big success.
Well, there were some folks who were at the tops of departments who went away, too.
Correct.
I mean, I think John King, who is an Office of Rural Health. I mean, he started in the western part of the state, I think.
I just don't remember that name.
Okay. And then the woman who was at DCDEE, you lost them early on.
Well,
there
was, when I came, there was a change of administration, and there was, unfortunately for the department and for most of state government, there was never the understanding that you needed a succession plan. So what happened is, in certainly at HHS and I think in the other departments, it was top heavy on people who were going to retire. So you didn't have, like, the second in charge who there was a possibility of instinctively coming into the role that was already mentored and trained and ready to fill in when the top person retired. So when I came in, there were, oh, my gosh, the amount of people who retired during the first 1 to 2 months that I was here was just incredible, that were just retiring. They were going to retire. That was just unrelated to anything else. They were just retiring. So incredible amount of people that left during the beginning because of that. And unfortunately, a lot of them, there was no second in charge. So that made it even more difficult in running the organization. But there are so many people that I've discovered and was able to, if not promote them, then move them to another position with allowing them to flourish professionally.
I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention
mm-hmm.
Ricky Diaz.
Yes.
I think he was, from the point of view on my side of the
equation,
he was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to do it again with him, would you have found someone different, or, you know, maybe tried using someone from within the department? I think he was a problem.
Well, I tell you what, Ricky was fabulous. What Ricky brought to our department, to the division, to communication, what was missing in the whole department, an ability to have an organizational structure. He set the platform for what Kendra now has, of creating an organizational structure. You need these type of folks to do this, and these type of, you need the graphics people, you need the press people dealing with the press, you need the people who are doing graphics, you need the, you need the people who write well, you need an organizational structure. And his vision and what he created inside of the department, the skeletal, Kendra's still with this. She's still living this. So Ricky Diaz created this entire model that we're still working from. He was excellent in that, and the vision of starting from scratch and developing an organization, mini organization because it's a division. So he was excellent in that, very passionate, extremely passionate. And that breath of fresh air of passion of the young ones was really something that was needed internally in the department. That spark of life, and it was really, truly needed. So I was very glad to bring that spark of new breath, of new life, and of new vision into the department. And we're still living through it.
But the flip side of it is mm-hmm. that he actively frustrated most people in the media. And I think that that may have hurt you early on, that you ended up with a contentious relationship with the media early, because I know that there was a point in time where Ricky wouldn't answer my phone calls, full stop. And so what do you end up doing? You've kind of created an adversarial relationship with folks who you're trying to utilize to get your word out, right? I guess that's do you take sort of a cautionary tale off of that at all?
Well, I most certainly was not aware that it was as dire as you are portraying your relationship. And considering I am so open and so transparent, as you know, and so available to everyone, I guess I'm just surprised you didn't find a way of speaking to me directly, if that was really the case.
Well,
you know?
I ended up writing an op-ed in the News and Observer, my way of doing that.
Right, but certainly I was not aware that it was as difficult for your side of the equation, as our side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
But he brought in so much good to the department. I mean, Kendra's truly living that with the organizational structure.
Was there anything that surprised you about government versus private industry?
Well, I worked in government before. I was in the federal government as a United States ambassador. So my initial surprise was when I was working for the president's side of the federal government on the difference between private sector and government. The shock was not there. The difference, it is certainly different state government than federal government, and so that's different.
How so? Sort of flesh that out a little bit.
Well, I think we seem to have a very hands-on General Assembly in North Carolina, far more than I experienced in Washington, in reference to professional interaction between the two, so that was a little surprising to me. But government is unique, my goodness, between the rules and regulations from the federal government and state government to run an organization, it's a lot to deal with.
I remember, I've known Dave Richard for years as an advocate, and I remember buttonholing him early this year and saying to him, Dave, what have you learned in the past year since you've been in this position? And he said, government's far more complicated than I ever imagined from the advocacy side.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. And if you were to not have experience in government and you were to come here, on the outside I was saying, well, why didn't they do that? Or all they need to do is this, fill in the blank. Well, maybe. Maybe. You have to consider an awful lot of things. Number one, and I've drilled this into senior leadership, number one, first and foremost, is follow the law. And you can't follow the law unless you know what the law is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just our law here in North Carolina. There's such a thing as federal law. So follow the law. That may really limit you in many ways, whatever that is. I gave you the example of, no, we couldn't have run a parallel IT system. Follow the law. And, number two is do the right thing. Not the other way around. And so from the outside, if you're not used to the complexity of government, it's hard to understand why certain things are done or when they're done or not done or how they're done. But you have to follow the law, and the law then has process to it, sometimes painfully long and unnecessarily difficult, but it does have a process to it.
Is that part of the problem, also with the legislature? Because I think a lot of the legislators come out of private industry. They're not as embedded in state government. They're sort of looking at it from the legislative side, and they say, well, it runs this way in my business. Why doesn't it run this way in industry?
Correct. And I think that's why it's necessary to have a balance for a working relationship between the different arms of government. Because at the end of the day, one can create all sorts of, for good reasons, very clever laws, but if you can't implement them, what good are they? Mm-hmm. Or if implementing them creates other downstream consequences that aren't foreseen. So there has to be a very open relationship between the different arms of government in order to create the best possible product.
So from where I sit, you haven't always had a smooth relationship with the legislature. What might have made that better? What could have been done? I mean, we talked about this at the beginning of your tenure, that whole issue of trust. You know, I remember sitting in a committee meeting at one point in time, and I thought the paint on the wall behind me was going to blister from some of the things that were being said in the room. You know, so again, is there something you might have done differently, or is there something that can be, you know, a way to get the legislature more on board? How could you have changed that, maybe?
Gosh, I mean, I guess one could choose a path of spending more time on Jones Street and less time in the organization. But I needed to accomplish the goal of having a sustainable, a predictable, accountable department towards our citizens. And therefore, the majority of my time was spent, as shows what we've accomplished during the almost 3 years. So I guess someone could have made a different decision. Well, I'll spend more time on Jones Street and I'll spend less time in the department. But with, you know, having to create an organization, that was not the deck of cards, that I did not have that opportunity to do that. I feel that in order to have the best possible product, people have to be able to listen. They don't have to agree. We're not all identical. God gave us our intellect to be able to be creative, to think, to be individuals. So I don't think that an act was probably not healthy that we all agree on everything all the time. But I think the ability to listen to people is really a skill. As you know, you've been around me for 3 years, I'm a bubbly, very open, very transparent. I'm speaking all the time, but I listen. And my knowledge base is huge.
Do you feel like the legislature is listening back?
I can't tell if they're listening, but I can't tell. No, that's a real. I meant it in the most respectful way. I can't. There's no way I would know if they're listening or not. I mean, I can't tell that. But I think that it's important to work very closely with the larger organizations/departments, because we actually know certain things. Like we know, if you tell us what your goal is, because you're in charge, you know, we'll get you to your goal. But when you tell us how we're to get to your goal, we may not be able to do that because of obstacle A, B, C, or D. Or it's going to be more problematic if we do it that way to get to your goal. Or if, you know, you can...
It's that complexity of government that you're...
Correct, correct. And so I think the not allowing... people to use their creativity to the tools in their toolbox in order to resolve the problems is problematic. Mm-hmm. But, that was, as you know, I will stand up for what I believe is right nonstop and pump it out at the end.
That much I have learned. In terms of believing, standing up for what you believe is right, talk a little bit about your vision for Medicaid reform. This is sort of the last undone thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, you've really pushed for the provider-led, the ACO model, mm-hmm. you know, on that score. And even today, you know, I think there's a concession to provider-led, but there's also the real desire to bring in managed care. Is that something that you are disappointed to not have seen done, or... wish you could have gotten done before you left? Or?
Well, I don't think there was enough time to get to the end. The legislative cycle still hasn't finished, right? And I was disappointed last year because I thought we could get it done last year. We would have been already a year and a half further into this. So that last year it was a disappointment. It was truly a disappointment because I thought the opportunity was there. We had all the stakeholders in the whole state lined up. We were all ready to go. I thought we missed an opportunity in North Carolina last year. That I firmly believe. We lost an opportunity last year. This year, again, it's a little bit different because this year the General Assembly hasn't finished yet. There's still a little bit more to do on their part. So maybe you're using your words disappointment. I don't have that same feelings I had last year.
They're not getting to where you were hoping to see them.
Well, you know, I was trying to make sure that we lead the state in a place that's the best for the state, and yet seeing the vision where Washington is going, so that we're not going in a different direction than Washington is going, because then in a year or two or three or five, we're just going to have to regroup again. So I was hoping to align the state to the direction of Washington, but with what we have on the ground in North Carolina, because it works for us here. Now, there are multiple models.
You're saying it works, things like CCNC?
Yes, our ability of providers, and our network of providers. We have things in the state that work really fabulously or work well, or if they're not totally perfect, we can get them a little bit better and tighter. But to use what we have on the ground, what we've created, and yet you know, to achieve the ultimate goal, of course, of being patient-centered and sustainable model. There are multiple models for Medicaid reform in the United States that work very well in other states. I was just hoping to create one for us that is us, that comes from us meaning North Carolina, and yet that facing forward to where the federal government is going in the Medicare arena, because the closer we are aligned with the Medicare world, the more efficient that is, and less problematic and complexities. So the more we are online, you know, the Medicare is opening the doors and being more available to the creativity of the ACO and offering all sorts of opportunities towards that. And that's what we really had an ability to create on the ground. Does not mean that other states don't have other models and that they're wrong. I don't think that was what that was about.
How has this job changed you?
How has the job changed me? Well, I've aged.
Like I said, only your colorist knows. But I mean, other than sort of packing your brain full of stuff that you didn't know before about North Carolina, is there anything that sort of that you're walking around going, I have a different viewpoint on this than I did before?
Well, what viewpoint do I have? I'm not sure it's a different viewpoint. I felt that my entire life, of every place I've done, that there are wonderful people who do wonderful things if they're offered the opportunity to do that. And if they're supported, they can change the world. It was just far more transparent to see that here, that often people are not allowed to use their skill sets. They're prevented from doing the right thing. They're confined in certain situations, and that's painful to watch. And I, as you know, have done everything humanly possible to offer opportunities of using one's offering opportunities for people to use their intellectual gifts to be able to creatively solve problems.
Well, I think about now. You and your husband have been political donors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kinds of experiences you've had in government, mm-hmm. coming away that you know. Perhaps you would be more willing to support a candidate who maybe has more experience in government or who is more sort of pragmatic rather than ideological. I mean, has doing this kind of job changed some of that for you?
Well, both my husband and I support a variety of causes, from religious to social to education to many causes that or priorities. But yes, it is true that we also, both financially and in effort, support politics. That is a civic obligation to do that. So, and I always will, because I really truly believe it's my civic obligation to be engaged in helping to preserve our freedoms and our democracy. And that's government. That's my civic responsibility. Your question is, will that change who I support, I guess, is your question. you know, I think all of us are human, and your past experiences influence your future decisions.
I
think that's human.
In truth, I know that you've supported President Bush and Governor McCrory,
mm-hmm.
and then that's it. I don't know who
correct.
Else you support.
Well, that's exactly
so
true.
That's,
right.
That's you know,
right.
So
right.
I,
right.
I don't know
right.
if that means
right.
that, you know, I think about the array of candidates on the Republican
mm-hmm.
Party right now. You have folks who are super ideological.
Oh, I see
then,
what you're asking.
You know,
yeah.
folks who are very
yeah.
sort of, you
yeah.
know, a little
I think
more
it's fair.
Pragmatic.
I think, yes, I think that on the Republican side, if we're speaking about politics, and this is my personal opinion, not as Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Which you are for 36 more
yeah,
hours.
That's right. But I think the Republican Party is very fortunate this time. There are lots of wonderful candidates with very different experiences, with very different backgrounds, with a diverse set of views, and I think that's healthy for government. And so I'm like super happy about that. I think the more that we can discuss our visions, all of us on all sides, the more we can discuss our visions and where we want to go and what we want to do, I think that's healthy. I think that's super healthy for society. So I'm happy to see that.
Mm-hmm. Just about it.
And then one last thing. What happens next? What do you do now? I mean, you're going to spend time with your mom, but I can't imagine you're going to knit.
No. Although that's been no, and I am. I have to go back to be with my mother. I mean, that's priority.
Mm-hmm.
Then I do need some a little bit of time to get my life together after 3 years of not being in my own home and spend time with my children and my husband. I was always, and I will continue to be very actively involved in the Institute of World Politics, the Graduate School of Counterintelligence. I'm on the board. I they've been patiently waiting for me to come back to my activities there, and I would like to do that, really looking forward to that. And the other, I would love to go back to being active again in the other board in Washington, Victims of Communism and Memorial Foundation. That is, again, that's my obligation to be active in that. I'm looking forward to that very much, very, very much.
Knitting.
Not exactly knitting. It takes me back many years for that. And I have a home in Washington, so I'm looking forward to that. And I have never in my life, after college and after graduate school, or even during graduate school, faced forward thinking, what will I do next? Opportunities have always presented them to myself. And that's a teaching moment. If there's the young ones ever listening, or younger ones, not young ones, it doesn't matter in life what you do. People in housekeeping or people running the free world, if you do what you do well, two things will happen. Number one, you are going to get personal satisfaction of what you do. And number two, people notice and opportunities unfold.
Well, terrific. Well, thank you so much for taking time to sit down with
well,
me today.
You.
I really
thank
appreciate
you so
it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.